Chapter 4. Johnny Bladani left the Silver Dome after Victor went inside. Next door, he went into Bruce's Juices and picked up a pint of Shavas and two packs of smokes. He also bought two jerky whips and had one halfway down before the door dinged on his caddy. He tossed the items on the passenger seat and climbed inside. He opened the Shavas and took a huge swallow. And another. Holding the pint, he rested his hand over the steering wheel. The caddy SUV only had 14,500 on the odometer, and it still smelled like leather and new car. He loved that smell. Maybe after this pickup from Victor, he would please Bang Bang and get a nice enough bonus to put down 15 or 20 on a new caddy or Lincoln of his own. He preferred caddies, but some of the older guys were being toured around town in Lincolns, so that was always a possibility. He started the engine and listened while it made no sound whatsoever. Cadillac, he said with a smile. There is no other. Cadillac or Lincoln, it really made no difference. Either was better than the Chevrolet Caprice he was driving now. His car had over 100 grand, and the tires were on their third version, pretty much to the point where they were unreliable. He needed the Victor money because Bang Bang would love him and bonus him, and that would take care of the car problems like that. He snapped his fingers. Just as he did, the cell phone played Voler by Dean Martin, and Johnny Bladani answered.
Blade Runner, hello, Bangs. Got it? Got my money with you? Not yet. He won't know if the bank will loan until in the morning.
Then we got a problem. I told His Honor we'd have the money to him by 10 tonight, latest.
We're not done yet. I'm seeing him at 10. We'll know more then.
And if he ain't got it at 10?
Bangs, that's your call. Just say the word, man.
If he ain't got it at 10, I want you to scare the hell out of him. No broken bones, no cuts, that's gonna show. But scare him bad.
Done.
Johnny, we're counting on you. It means a lot to the big guy.
I'll have your money in your hands by noon tomorrow. This guy will never short us again. That is my solemn promise to you, Bangs.
Attaboy, Johnny. Well, look, I'll call His Honor, tell him this, an unavoidable delay. I'll tell him we'll have his funds by noon. That should loosen him up.
Johnny laughed over the cell connection. He needed to be in good with his superior.
Bangs, I gotta get out of here. There's no women in this town, no clubs, no decent food, no strippers, no game, nothing for a guy to do. I mean, I'd take care of this guy, then what? Where do I go?
Same place you stayed last night.
That's some dive in Springfield. That's an hour away.
The drive will do you good after you're done with him tonight. Give you a chance to think about the bonus I'm laying on for you for all your troubles.
Geez, you wouldn't mind telling me how much.
But you gotta produce. None of this is coming back empty-handed. No coming back short. This guy has it. You make damn sure you get it. That's our money he's glommed onto.
You got it, Banks. I'm your main play here.
Remember, no breaks, no visible cuts. That's my boy.
I'm your boy, Banks.
They hung up, and Johnny slipped the cell in his pocket. He pulled out of the Silver Dome lot and headed back east. He would find a quiet street and music down while he waited. He was already 9, give or take. Wouldn't be long now. Johnny drove farther out east until he was almost to Victor's bus. Then he found the closest cross street, Mason Street, and hung a left onto it, drove to the end, spun a U, then came back and parked so he could see the bus. He now had a clear view of the front door with its little metal step. It wouldn't be long until Victor showed. He'd get the haps, then head back to his hotel. Tomorrow would be a new day. Exactly at 10:05, Victor flew past Johnny's spot, and moments later came a woman following in an old Impala.
Gotta love them old cars, Johnny muttered.
The woman was going half the speed of Victor, and he was waiting for her at the bus when she nosed in and put it in park. Johnny saw her brake lights flare red when she shoved the tranny into park, and he saw her door swing open.
Now who's this? He said to himself. Some road dog or something nice?
He watched Victor insert his key in the lock, whereupon the overhead exterior light blinked on, and Victor ushered the woman up the two low steps and out inside the bus. The door closed, and within minutes the exterior light blinked out, only to be followed by the sudden glare of a night security light hanging from a pole at the end of the bus. Victor must have activated that light from the bus, he thought, but why isn't it always on? He had no explanation, so he just waited, giving them time to settle in and drop their guard, with Victor thinking he was safe. Johnny wanted his guard down on purpose. That's why he had disappeared after Victor went inside the Silver Dome. He had driven around, scouting the bullcrap town with its rolled-up sidewalks, killing time, killing more time, until he went back to Bruce's Juices and loaded up on refreshments. He closed his eyes and waited. After 5 minutes, he punched his cell. 10:17. Perfect. Without headlights, Johnny started up and swung a left. He crept down Washington until he came to Victor's, where he nosed in. He reached and switched off the caddy's interior auto light. He opened the door as quietly as he could. He crept to the back door of the bus. He wanted Victor alone, away from the girl or woman, whatever, so he could get right down to it about the money. No sense in seeing her face, not if it could be helped. In gliding past the bus's center window, he saw Victor looking down at him and move toward the rear of the bus all in one motion. All right. He knew he was there. Johnny knocked, and the door immediately swung open. There was no backlight. Victor hadn't switched on the overhead, so Johnny didn't know if Victor was armed or not.
"Can I come inside?"
he asked.
"Just the talk. Then I'm gone."
He made a slick motion with his hand, a Chicago indication of gone. Victor took a step back and opened the door.
I told you I wouldn't have it until morning. Maybe not all of it even then.
Johnny's eyes quickly adjusted to the dark room.
"Why you live like this?" he complained. "No lights."
"There. That better?"
Victor said and reached behind for the switch. Wraparound fluorescence bathed the room, and Johnny could see that Victor looked scared and old under the harsh light.
"He won't be getting any tonight," Johnny laughed to himself. "Not looking like that. Does this guy never manicure? Never pick that crap out of his face?"
The blackheads across Victor's nose were emphasized under the glare, and Johnny was suddenly repulsed by the man.
"Why you got me here in bum town the middle of the night, hey, Victor?"
"I don't got you any place. You've called me from Chicago, and I would have made things right."
No. That ain't the way business gets done. No calls to you. You could be wired. You could be tapped. Who knows? My people, we like to do our business eyeball to eyeball. That way, everything gets done nice and tidy. You ain't wired, are you, Victor?"
"No way. Look."
Without being asked, Victor pulled up his sweater and shirt. His belly protruded and his obese physique further sickened Johnny. It made him hate the man even more.
"Victor, how about I join you and the lady for a drink? We can talk and get some things settled. Who knows? I might even get lucky with her."
"No, she's not that kind of girl. She's just a friend, a waitress who dropped in for one drink, and then she's gone."
"Waitress? That's even better. I'll say when she's gone, Vic. Capiche?"
"Capiche."
"Now, go get your bottle and bring it to me. I'm going to sweeten it up."
"I don't think so. I think you should leave now."
In one sleight-of-hand move, Johnny displayed the flashing switchblade and pressed the steel point directly under Victor's chin.
"We ain't negotiating, friend. This ain't no sit-down. You don't have my money. You gotta pay. You gotta see how bad it is to screw your friends in Chicago."
The knife pressed in and pierced the skin. It touched the jawbone in Victor's head and voluntarily snapped back.
"Easy, Vic. You don't want me to slip. Now get that bottle and get your fat ass back in here."
Victor returned with an open champagne bottle in minutes. Johnny was ready with a capsule of dry powder. Victor asked what the hell he thought he was doing. Johnny told him it's a roofie, the date rape drug. Roofie is a benzo-something drug used in Mexico as an anesthetic, Johnny said while he powdered the bottle. "It's legal in Mexico. We get it FedEx from Sonola. Why anesthetic?" Victor wanted to know. Then Victor was pleading. "Don't do this," he begged. "Don't." Johnny smiled and shook a second capsule's contents into the bottle.
"Now let's go refresh your guest's drink. She must be thirsty and feeling so lonely."
Which is when Ermeline first laid eyes on Johnny Bladani. He strode into the room, flashed her the great smile nature gave him, and swiped her drink out of her hand. He said he would refresh it for her. She started to object, started to say she'd had all she agreed to have, but Johnny brushed her aside. "Just one more with me, this time," he said. "You'll make me a happy man, and then you can go." She thought he was attractive in a kind of city way, and maybe she even liked his dark quality. Maybe even liked that he seemed a little bit dangerous around the edges. She'd been known to be attracted to certain types. She agreed. One more, and then gone. She came to 5 hours later. Her chest, her breasts, were on fire, and she struggled to understand where she was. Victor was nowhere to be seen, and the other man was gone. She screamed.